ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading from Canto 9, Chapter 20, verses 14 and 15. Text 14 doesn't have a purport, so I'll read it and then we can go on to text 15. Asyatam yara vindaksha grihyatam arhanam chana pujyatam santi nivara usyatam yadirochate. Asyatam, please come sit here. He, indeed. Arvinda Aksha, O great hero with eyes like the petals of a lotus. Grihyatam, please accept. Arhanam, humble reception. Cha, and. Naha, our. Bhujyatam, please eat. Santi, what there is in stock. Nivharaha, Nivhara rice. Usyatam, stay here. Yadi, if. Rochate, you so desire. Translation. O king with eyes like the petals of a lotus, kindly come sit down and accept whatever reception we can offer. We have a supply of Nivara rice that you may kindly take. And if you so desire, stay here without hesitation. Text 15. Shri Dushmant Uvacha.
This isn't the verse. He's put the wrong verse on them. It's not the right verse.
Text 15 is Upapanam Idam Subru.
So what sloka did you give?
So I'll just read it because the wrong verse has been put on the board.
Upapanam Idam Subru Jataya Kushikanvaye Svayam Hivrinute Ragyam Kanyaka Sadrisham Varam.
Shri Dushmanta Uvacha.
You can, Manta Uvacha.
King Dushmanta replied, Upapanam, just befitting your position. Idam, this. Subru, O Shakuntala, with beautiful eyebrows. Jataya, because of your birth. Kushika Anvaye, in the family of Vishvamitra. Svayam, personally. He, indeed. Vrinute, select. Rajnam, Ragyam, of a royal family. Kanyakaha, daughters. Sadrisham, on an equal level. Varam, husbands. King Dushmanta replied, O Shakuntala, with beautiful eyebrows, you have taken your birth in the family of the great saint Vishvamitra, and your reception is quite worthy of your family. Aside from this, the daughters of a king generally select their own husbands. Purport. In her reception of Maharaj Dushmanta, Shakuntala clearly said, Your Majesty may stay here, and you may accept whatever reception I can offer. Thus she indicated that she wanted Maharaj Dushmanta as her husband. As far as Maharaj Dushmanta was concerned, He desired Shakuntala as his wife from the very beginning, as soon as he saw her. So the agreement to unite as husband and wife was natural. To induce Shakuntala to accept the marriage, Maharaj Dushmanta reminded her that as the daughter of a king, she could select her husband in an open assembly. In the history of Aryan civilization, there have been many instances in which famous princesses have selected their husbands in open competitions. For example, it was in such a competition that Sita Devi accepted Lord Ramachandra as her husband, and that Draupadi accepted Arjun, and there are many other instances. So marriage by agreement or by selecting one's own husband in an open competition is allowed. There are 8 kinds of marriage, of which marriage by agreement is called Gandharva marriage. Generally, the parents select the husband or wife for their daughter or son. But Gandharva marriage takes place by personal selection. Still, although marriage by personal selection or by agreement took place in the past, we find no such thing as divorce by disagreement. Of course, divorce by disagreement took place among low-class men, but marriage by agreement was found even in the very higher classes, especially in the royal Kshatriya families. Maharaj Dushmanta's acceptance of Shakuntala as his wife was sanctioned by Vedic culture. How the marriage took place is described in the next verse. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. So in this 9th canto, entitled Liberation, we're reading so many histories of the great kings who gave up their kingdoms and attained liberation by concentrating on the Supreme Lord. So now we're reading about the descendants of Kusha, who is the son of Ramachandra, one of the sons. One of the other descendants was Kaushika. His name was Kaushika because that comes from the word Kusha. And Kaushika is Vishwamitra Maharaj. So Vishwamitra Maharaj, he was the son of Gadi. We've read all of these particular histories in the previous chapters, but we're going to give a little preview because Dushmanta, he was the son of Rebi, who's also coming in that line. Kanva was two generations before him. He had come to the ashram of Kanva Muni. And there he saw the world beauty. Srila Prabhupada calls her the most beautiful woman in the world, Shakuntala. And she was the daughter of this Vishwamitra Muni and Menaka, who was an apsara sent from the heavenly planets by Indra. Now Vishwamitra Muni, as the son of Gadi, Gadi had a beautiful daughter. And Richika Muni wanted to marry that daughter. But Gadi was not favorable to Richika marrying his daughter. So he made a completely impossible request from the Muni. He said, I want 1,000 horses, all black, with just one ear, right ear, something absolutely that no ordinary person could possibly fulfill. But Richika Muni, being a powerful mystic yogi, he went to Varunadev and got from him exactly the number of horses with exactly the ear, with the right color, everything exactly that Gaudi requested, and brought them to Gadi, and Gadi was satisfied, and then gave his daughter to Richika Muni in marriage. So Richika Muni, being a powerful sage, it was time to bless his wife with a child, and both the child, the daughter, Satyavati, and her mother wanted a child. So he made two different types of oblations, one for his wife and one for his mother-in-law. And he gave them to each of them, and then he went to take bath. And the mother, coming from a Kshatriya family, she was thinking that, well, naturally, the husband will be more favorable to the wife. So she asked her daughter, you give me your oblation, I'll give you my oblation. She thought that would be a more powerful son. So they switched oblations, and they took them. And when Richikamuni came back, he found out what his wife had done, that they had switched the oblations. And he got very angry. He said, I have given you an oblation so that you would have a very saintly Brahmin son. And I have given your mother an oblation because she's the wife of a king, so that she would have a very powerful and fierce Kshatriya son. So now you've mixed up the oblations, and you're going to have a fierce Kshatriya son instead of a peaceful Brahmin. And he was very angry. So Satyavati, she appeased her husband, made him peaceful, and she begged him to make some adjustment. And he said, well, all right, next generation will be the fierce Kshatriya. So her son was Jamadagni, and Jamadagni's son was Parshuram, who was Brahmin by birth, but with fierce Kshatriya nature. And the mother's son was Vishvamitra, who was Kshatriya, very powerful Kshatriya. He had massive kingdom, but his nature was Brahminical. He wanted to become a Brahmarishi. And how this happened was, the family priest was Vasishtha Muni. And one time, because the kings, they travel throughout their kingdom to make sure that everything is going nicely within the kingdom. They visit the cities, the forests, they hunt. He was visiting the ashrams of the saintly sages. And he visited the ashram of Vasishtha Muni. And Vasishtha Muni very lovingly welcomed him and wanted to feed him. And he had thousands of soldiers with him. And he implored Vishvamitra that, I want to feed your entire army. You please allow me to do so. And Vishvamitra, again and again, he refused. He said, no, I've only come to take your blessings. I don't want to cause you any inconvenience. You please allow us to go now. What you've given us, some fruits, that's fine. But Vasishtha wanted to feed them all. So finally, Vishvamitra, he acceded. He said, all right, if you want to do that, then please, we're here to serve you. So he called his Kamadenu, Sabala, in some places Sabala, in some places Nandini. And from Nandini came unlimited amount of beautiful foodstuffs, all types of milk preparations and drinks and grains, and he was able to feed the entire army with the benedictions of his Kamadenu. And Vishvamitra had never seen anything like that, that from one cow so much could come. So being the king and being very proud, he said to Vasishtha Muni, who was his priest, his family priest, he said, I'm the king, and the king should be given the best of everything. So I want you to give this cow to me. And Vasishtha Muni, who was a simple Brahmin living in the mountains with his disciples, he says, I'm completely dependent on this Kamadenu for all of my sacrifices. She provides everything that we need to carry on the yajnas so that everything is peaceful in the world. So if you take her away, this would disrupt all of the yajnas that we perform as Brahmins. So he refused. With very good logic, he refused, because it would disrupt all of the peaceful yajnas that he was performing. But Vishvamitra, he was determined to take that cow. So by force, he took the cow from her. And the cow was pleading to Vasishtha, I've served you for so many years, you're letting this ruffian take me away now. And Vasishtha Muni, being a Brahmin, he said, well, I have to forgive him because that's the Brahmin's quality. But you're so powerful, you can do something. So immediately what the cow did was, she demolished the entire army. From out of her came so many weapons. She killed all of the sons of Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra was standing there all alone then. And the cow went back to Vasishtha. So when Vishwamitra Muni saw the Brahma Tejas of Vasishtha, he decided that I am just a lowly Kshatriya and my power has been completely defeated by this Brahmin. So at that time, he decided that he would perform severe tapasya so that even though born as a Kshatriya, he could become a Brahmin. So there are different places that are mentioned. Some say he went to Pushkar, some say he went to the Himalayas, wherever it was. Some say he went to the place where his sister, Kaushiki, she became a river, the Kaushiki River. He went there to meditate. For 60,000 years he meditated there to create Brahma Tejas within his body. And he followed every single rule and regulation of yoga exactly. Just as Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, everything, sitting in a secluded place, observing complete moan, total dhyan, meditation, samadhi. But there was one thing missing, bhakti. He wasn't doing any of this with bhakti to the Supreme Lord. He was doing this to attain something. So yes, he attained something, but he became so powerful that Indra and the other demigods, they became fearful. Because Indra, he's also within this material world, and although he's a very powerful administrator of the Supreme Lord, he also has the qualities of envy, anger. We see that in Krishna's pastimes sometimes. Illusion. So he became fearful that this Kshatriya is becoming so powerful, he's acquired the weapons of Lord Shiva now, he's acquired Brahma Tejas, he's now performing such severe tapasya. So he wanted to break this tapasya of Vishwamitra. And he called, because in the heavenly planets, the Gandharvas and the Apsaras, also, Kamadev himself, they're all servants of Indradev. So he called one very beautiful Apsara, Menaka, and he instructed her, I want you to break his meditation. So this was order from her commander-in-chief, Lord Indra. She went, she did what she had to do. She went and bathed in a lake, and the tinkling of her bangles and her ankle bells, although Vishwamitra was deep in meditation with his eyes closed. Just by hearing the sound of the bangles, he opened his eyes and he saw the beauty of Menaka bathing. So because of his Kshatriya nature, Kshatriya by nature, they are very attracted to lusty activities. So all of his meditation, all of his yogic practices were broken in a moment when he saw the beauty of this Apsara Menaka. And for 100 years, he enjoyed with her. And after 100 years, one girl child was produced, and that was this Shakuntala. And even she was so beautiful, such a beautiful little child. And there's Prabhupada again and again, he says, there's a picture of this, probably everyone's seen this picture, where Menaka is showing the beautiful girl child to Vishwamitra. And when he sees the child, he realizes, oh, I've committed such a great mistake. Here I was trying for Brahma Tejas, and I fell down by the beauty of this woman. And now a child is produced. So he said to Menaka, do not show her, do not show her. And he left her immediately. And Menaka, because in marriage, 8 different kinds of marriages, but in all the marriages, the husband is supposed to maintain the wife and the children. But Vishwamitra, he didn't actually marry Menaka. It was an agreement, just on sense gratification. So he left her. And when he left her, she immediately left the baby there also.
Jai Jai Shri Gornitaiki Jai Jai Shri Gornitaiki Jai.
She left the baby in the forest and went back to the heavenly planets. So the baby was there in the forest. She never even got to see her father. She didn't know who her mother was, nothing. And Kanva Muni heard the baby crying, and he adopted this little baby girl, took her to his ashram, and raised her. So now she's a grown woman sitting in the ashram of Kanva Muni, and Dushmanta comes. Dushmanta means one who can destroy all evil. So he's also on tour. He was the king then, seated in Hastinapur. He was touring his kingdom on a hunting expedition. He was tired, and Kanva Muni's ashram was in sight. He went there. And there at the ashram, he was with his soldiers also, he saw the beautiful Shakuntala and was immediately attracted to her. And without any further ado, he went there with a few of his soldiers and immediately, more or less, proposed to her. So in the previous verses, "O beautiful lotus-eyed woman, who are you? Whose daughter are you? What purpose do you have in this solitary forest? Why are you staying here?" Maharaj Dushmanta indirectly expressed his desire to marry Shakuntala, for she appeared to his mind to be the daughter of some Kshatriya king. So now Shakuntala, in verse 13, the previous verse, she said, "I am the daughter of Vishwamitra." In fact, she was the daughter of a very powerful Kshatriya, Vishwamitra. "My mother Menaka left me in the forest. O hero, the most powerful saint Kanva Muni knows all about this. Now let me know, how may I serve you?" So there was immediate attraction between Dushmanta and Shakuntala. Now, of the eight different kinds of marriage, the topmost marriage is the Brahma Vivaha. Brahma Vivaha is when the parents of the son go to the parents of the daughter and request the daughter to marry the son. There's no dowry involved. Simply the parents of the daughter give the daughter in charity to the son. That's the topmost marriage. And then after that, there's Prajapati marriage, there's Rishik marriage, there's all different types of marriage. The sixth type of marriage, just above Rakshasa and Paishachi marriage, is Gandharva marriage. Gandharva marriage is quite common. Nowadays it's called love marriage. And that means the girl sees the boy, the boy sees the girl, and there's a natural attraction. And by the two of them in agreement, they agree to marry. They don't take any permission from the family on either side. They don't take any priest to perform the marriage ceremony. But simply by agreement, and we'll learn in the next verse, simply by chanting Om, which is a representative of the Supreme Lord, Dushmanta and Shakuntala married. They spent one night together. And because Dushmanta, being a powerful Kshatriya, that night did not go in vain. He gave Shakuntala a very powerful son. So that son was in the womb now of Shakuntala. Dushmanta, he then went back to his kingdom, saying that he would come again to bring his wife to his kingdom. But when he went back to his kingdom, he got so busy in his administrative work that he forgot about the incident. There are other stories, they're not mentioned in this particular canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada mentions them, and they're mentioned in also the Mahabharata, the Adi Parva, how Shakuntala, she was just thinking of when Dushmanta would return, and she was deep in thought of him. And the great, powerful sage, what's his name? Dur, the one who cursed the Ambarish. Durvasa Muni. He was a friend of Kanva Muni. So he happened to come to the ashram of Kanva Muni. And Shakuntala, she was just sitting there thinking of her husband, pining for her husband, and she didn't greet Durvasa Muni properly. As she greeted here Dushmanta so nicely, she offered him Nivara rice. Now, what is Nivara rice? It's not mentioned here. Nivara rice is used, as, especially in Kerala, in different Vedic ceremonies. It's a wild rice. It has a red coating on it. It's pounded. It's made into pais. It's fed to babies to give them a lot of strength. It's used in Ayurveda for respiratory, circulatory, all different types of diseases, tuberculosis. It's a very strengthening rice. So because it grows wild, and because Kanva Muni's ashram, of course, was in the forest, they had a stock of that. So Shakuntala offered that rice to Dushmanta. Whatever they had, they didn't have anything from the market. There was no market in the forest. Just whatever they could collect within the forest, Shakuntala offered to Dushmanta. So Durvasa Muni, when he arrived there, Shakuntala didn't give him a proper reception. And being angry by nature, he also became angry with Ambarish Maharaj and suffered a great deal for that. So he became angry with Shakuntala and he cursed her that whoever you're thinking of, that person will forget you. So then she begged him, please forgive me, and she placated him. And he said, well, later on, you'll show him something by which he'll remember you again. So Prabhupada, he discusses at the time of Vikramaditya Maharaj, who was a powerful king here in India, there was a poet named Kalidas. And Kalidas wrote about 30 or 40 different dramas. Of them, four are most famous. Prabhupada says that he was a gramya kavi. That means he was a mundane poet. But he wrote a beautiful poem called Abhigya Shakuntala. And Abhigya means recognizing Shakuntala. So in this poem that he wrote about Shakuntala and Dushmanta, it's described here that when the baby Bharat was born in the ashram of Kanva Muni, Kanva Muni performed all of the rites for the child because Dushmanta didn't come back. And then he sent Shakuntala and the child to Dushmanta, to the kingdom. He didn't send them alone. He sent them with his disciples so that she could safely reach the kingdom of Dushmanta. This is the Abhigya Shakuntala, the way Kalidas tells the story. And Dushmanta had given her his ring, the king's insignia ring, so that it was a marriage. You know, they exchanged things. Sometimes they exchanged a garland. So in this case, he gave her a ring. So before reaching the kingdom, she took bath and the ring fell off. Naturally, the ring is very big for a king. It fell off. And a fish ate it. And a fisherman caught the fish. And the fisherman's wife wanted to make curry out of the fish. When he cut open the fish, he found the ring. And he brought that ring to a sage. The sage brought it to Dushmanta. And Dushmanta then, when he saw the ring, he remembered. Now here, according to 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the history goes that Shakuntala went to Dushmanta, and because Shakuntala was from outside the kingdom, no one knew her, none of the ministers knew her, none of the citizens knew her. So he, although he recognized her, he said, I don't know who you are. But then an omen came from the sky that the father appears as the son. And this is actually your son. And the wife is simply the storekeeper of the seed of the father. So you must accept your son and do not insult your wife, Shakuntala. So from this omen, which everyone heard in the whole assembly, Dushmanta happily accepted his wife and his son, Bharat. Now, this ninth canto, called Liberation, it's a prelude to the tenth canto. Tenth canto is called the Summum Bonum, and it's when Parikshit Maharaj, because Sukadeva Goswami did everything very scientifically in presenting the Supreme Lord's pastimes. And before he arrived at the tenth canto, he gave the entire genealogical dynasty history of where Parikshit Maharaj came from and where the Supreme Lord also appeared, in which dynasty he appeared. So now Sukadeva Goswami is describing the dynasty that Parikshit Maharaj appeared in, which is the Kuru dynasty. And that Kuru dynasty comes from this Bharat. There are three principal Bharats that we read about. One is Bharat as the brother of Ramachandra, who also comes in this dynasty. The second is Bharat, who is the son of Rishabdev. And Srila Prabhupada says that actually Bharatvarsh is named after this particular Bharat, the son of Rishabdev. Because before Bharat Maharaj was given the kingdom by Rishabdev, this planet was called Ilavritivarsh. And then after that, the planet was called Bharatvarsh, after the king Bharat. Now the third Bharat, which is equally important as the previous two Bharats, is Dushmanta's son Bharat, because he was a very powerful king. Even as a little child in the ashram of Kanva Muni, sometimes he would want to play with the little baby cub lions. Little babies, they were very cute. So he would go pick up the baby lions, and the mother would come, ferocious female lion, to attack Bharat. And he would just play with her like a toy. He was so powerful, even as a little child, he would play with the lions and the tigers and defeat them. So that was how powerful this Bharat was. And at his birth, he had very auspicious signs. On his right hand, he had the Lord's chakra. And on the soles of his feet, he had two Padma signs. So these are very auspicious. You can read them in the different parts of the Vedas. The auspicious signs of a king, auspicious signs of the incarnations. So these are very auspicious signs that appear on a king. So when Dushmanta, who performed so many powerful yajñas for the benefit of the world because he was king of the world, when it was time for him to retire, he turned over his kingdom to his son, Bharat. And Bharat, being such a powerful king, he continued in the line of all of these great kings coming from Ramachandra to Kusha, Kaushika. Now we're coming to Dushmanta and Bharat. He performed 54 horse sacrifices and 78 horse, I don't remember the numbers, but so many horse sacrifices on the banks of the Ganga, starting at the mouth of the Ganga all the way up to Gangotri, then from Prayag, where the Jamuna enters into the Ganga at the Triveni, from Prayag up to the Jamunotri, so many horse sacrifices, very powerful. Now, Shakuntala, being the daughter of Vishwamitra Muni, these powerful kings, they can become so powerful, they can rule very peacefully this entire planet. But Vishwamitra Muni, because he had now given up Menaka and left his daughter Shakuntala, he went again for another 60,000 years. And this time he was determined not to fall down. So he again performed yoga. And this time, when Indra saw that he was becoming so powerful, fire coming out of his head or his eyes, something. So Indra again sent an apsara, Ramba. So when Vishwamitra Muni, this time, saw the Apsara Ramba. He didn't fall down. He cursed her that for 1,000 years you'll remain here as a stone. So 60,000 years, another 60,000 years, finally at this time, Vishwamitra Muni, due to his Brahma-tejas, he attained the status of Brahma Rishi. And Vasishta even, who they were enemies, enemies because of Harishchandra, we read about it, because Vishwamitra Muni took all the possessions of Harishchandra. Vasishta objected to this. They had a big fight. They cursed and counter-cursed each other. One became a bird, another became a duck. As a bird and a duck, they continued to fight. So there was long-term animosity between Vasishta and Vishwamitra, starting from when Vishwamitra tried to steal the Kamadhenu. But when Vasishta Muni saw that now at last Vishwamitra has attained this Brahma Tejas, attained the level of Brahma Rishi, then he came and he forgave Vishwamitra for everything. He befriended Vishwamitra, and the both of them, of the Sapta Rishis, they're two of the Sapta Rishis that circle the Dhruva planet. You see at night, going from east to west, there's 7 stars at the top of the universe, the northern part, most northern part of the universe, where the North Pole star is, that's Dhruvalok. These 7 stars, they circumambulate Dhruvalok. So the Brahma Rishis, they're situated on those 7 stars, and 2 of them are Vishwamitra and Vasishta. And they both took part in many of the pastimes of both Lord Ram and Lord Krishna. In Lord Krishna's pastimes, Vishwamitra Muni, the father of Shakuntala, he came to the lunar eclipse to get the darshan of Sri Krishna. And at that time, Sri Krishna blessed Vishwamitra and all the sages that they would get pure devotion for him. So he was blessed by the Supreme Lord himself to get bhakti then. Also, he had very pure bhakti for Ramachandra. He went there, he arranged for the marriage between Ramachandra and Sita Devi. And in the Krishna Leela, he took birth as the Brahmin who was sent by Rukmini to deliver the message. So he also took part as a matchmaker between Krishna and Rukmini. And then for a third time, in Chaitanya Leela, he took birth as Vanamali Acharya, Vanamali Ghatak. And he arranged the marriage between Nimai Pandit and Lakshmi Priya. So in all 3 of the incarnations, he was able to take part as matchmaker. And he developed bhakti by the grace of Sri Krishna at this lunar eclipse. Then he took part, he went to Dwarka, and he performed a big yagya along with the rishis for Vasudev. And then Vasudev sent them to Pindarak, and it was at that place that the rishis cursed Samba and the other sons of Krishna for the dissolution of the dynasty, because they tried to trick the rishis. He was one of those rishis. There are other times, he tried to stop the war of Kurukshetra. So he was very active, also in Krishna's Leela, along with Ramachandra's Leela. These munis, they could live for such a long time, through yugas and yugas. So Vishwamitra Muni, who was the father of the Shakuntala, he took part in both Ramachandra's pastimes and in Sri Krishna's pastimes. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in 1975, there was a lot of preaching going on. And particularly, the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, Prabhupada encouraged them to take bus preaching out. There were about 25 buses going all over America, and then it started in Europe. Then they brought 4 buses here to Vrindavan. We had a bus party in 75, 76. So in 1975, Prabhupada went to one of our temples, Detroit. And all of the brahmacharis and sannyasis had come to meet Prabhupada, all the bus parties, because Prabhupada was going to install 4 Gaura-Nithai deities for 4 new buses. So in his lecture, he said, Vishwamitra Muni, he performed tapasya for 60,000 years. And still, after 60,000 years, he was attracted to the beauty of Menaka, because he hadn't yet developed bhakti for Krishna. But simply by going out on Sankirtan for a few days, you can develop more results of tapasya, because your bhakti will increase simply by this Sankirtan movement, so that Maya Devi can never disturb you. So then all the devotees, they cheered, they were so happy. And when Prabhupada saw the devotees were so happy, he also became so happy. So Prabhupada was telling the devotees that even 60,000 years of tapasya, one can still fall down. But if one simply goes out on Sankirtan, traveling Sankirtan, any kind of Sankirtan, you can attain better results because Maya cannot touch you. And again, Prabhupada gives the example that Vishwamitra Muni, he was not protected by the Lord because he hadn't developed bhakti. But Haridas Thakur, Maya Devi herself came to test him, and he passed the test because he was simply attached to the beautiful form of Krishna. So anyone who becomes attached to the form of Shyam Sundar, they never have to worry about the illusion of Maya. They simply have to remember that beautiful form of Shyam Sundar, and Indradev, Maya Devi, Menaka, Ramba, it doesn't matter who comes before you, you just remember Shyam Sundar and you're always safe. Hare Krishna. Jai.
Any questions?
Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yes, 1970. It started in 1969. I'm about 10 to 13 years younger than all of my great senior godbrothers and godsisters. I'm a lot younger than Jamuna, Shyam Sundar, Malati. I'm a little kid compared to them. So when they were opening temples in the 60s and going to different countries and things like that, I was still a little kid. So, and I didn't know about the devotees, though I was born in America, but I was too young to have heard about the devotees. So, but my parents raised me very religiously, very conservatively. They wouldn't let me go anywhere, so I would just study all the time. And studying, when I was about 15, I decided that I have to find out what the purpose of life is. And probably somewhere in the oldest scriptures in the world, God must have told somebody what the purpose of life is. So I determined that the oldest scriptures in the world are the Vedas, the Oriental scriptures. So I studied, and in America, they don't teach the Vedas. Even in the best universities, Harvard, Yale, they only teach Christianity. But there's some very special universities in America that do actually teach the Vedas. And I aimed for the best university, that was University of Chicago. You'll see in Prabhupada's original Macmillan, the top professor, Professor Dimmock, he wrote the introduction for the preface. Because it was considered the best for Oriental studies. So all honors, everything, I got accepted into University of Chicago to attend the Oriental Institute there, because I wanted to study the Vedas. Before the classes started, I went to the library and I decided there are a few days, let me pick a book to read. It was just my habit. Out of all the books in the whole library, in the whole bookshop, I picked the Bhagavad Gita, just by Krishna's arrangement. And for 4 or 5 days, I read that Bhagavad Gita. Once, twice, as many times as I could. And I realized that this book has all the knowledge that I'm looking for. And I decided right then, before the classes started, there's no need for me to attend the university. I have to find people who can teach me this Bhagavad Gita. And I left the university, and I was 18 years old, a kid. I decided, well, if anyone knows Bhagavad Gita, if anyone's teaching Bhagavad Gita, it must be in California, because that's where all the hippies live, where all the counterculture people live. So I went to California. And there, on the corner of Haight-Ashbury Street, Haight and Ashbury, it's a chorai, there were the devotees chanting. It was 1969, like that. I saw the devotees. And I realized, these are the people I'm looking for. But it was only brahmacharis. And I was a girl. And I was too shy to talk to them. So I realized then, yes, now I have the Bhagavad Gita. Now I know the people I'm looking for, although I couldn't talk to them. So I went back to my hometown, Philadelphia. And there in Philadelphia, the devotees had just sent 4 devotees to open a temple in Philadelphia. And I went to the Philadelphia city, and there were the devotees chanting. And there were some girls. So they gave me an invitation, and I went to the temple. I went to the temple, Bhagavad Gita. They were teaching Bhagavad Gita, exactly what I was looking for. So that was a Thursday night. Then Sunday I went to the feast, and that Tuesday, which happened to be May 26th, I moved into the temple, and I never left after that. So that was May 26, 1970. So I figured now's lockdown. Everyone's living very austerely here in the lockdown. So it's a good excuse. We can feed everybody here. So I never expected to give class or anything like that. I just wanted to feed all you devotees some kheer today and beg for your blessings that I can continue at least another 50 years in Prabhupada's service. So please give me your blessings. Hare Krishna.
We need your blessings.
Huh?
We need your blessings.
What can I do? I'll give you kheer. That's about as much as I can do. So now is prasadam time, everyone please take. And also it's a feast because Jaipataka Swami or his disciples they gave. So everyone please take prasadam now. Hare Krishna. Jai.